Welcome back, everyone, to Talking It Out with Mike and Brian. Today's guest is a man who made it pretty far in this season of The Bachelorette, but unfortunately, we didn't get to learn much about him. But don't worry, that's what we're here for on Talking It Out, because today we're going to get to know the man, Brendan, and find out about his life story and his road to learning about love on The Bachelorette. But of course, you know how we always do. We got to get to our hot takes. So, Mike, take it away.
Yes, thank you, Brian. I'm glad to be back, man. I'm glad that, you know, can we just shout out to all of our listeners right quick? We love y'all. Thank y'all for the feedback. We genuinely do appreciate it. Let's keep it going. But for my hot take, this is the question of the day. If you saw one of your friend's partners out in public cheating, would you mind your business? Or would you tell them?
Wow.
So this is funny because I'm reading a book right now on a therapist guide to consensual non-monogamy, right? Not for me to do that, but for a therapist to aid individuals that have that type of relationship, right? With that being said, if I see that and I don't know the situation, I'm gonna tell. Like, I gotta tell. Like, if it's you and Rachel, I'm telling big sis. I have to.
Wait, would you tell big sis and you would tell me if it was the opposite?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay. Just making sure.
I would probably, Rachel's gonna be mad I'll say this, but I would probably have I'll be more pissed off if I saw Rachel do it. I ain't going for it. That's terrible to say.
You expect less of me?
No, it's just the society. It's just the society that we live in. And it's as if men are the ones that always cheat when we know women cheat as well. She would break my heart. I'd be like, Rachel, what the hell's wrong with you? But yes, I would have to tell it. What about you?
Okay, so I need a lot of details on certain situations. Context is super important.
Of course, but we don't have that. It's just a question as is.
I think you got to be very careful when it comes to situations like this if you're the friend. Like, you have to think about all the scenarios before you decide to tell your friend that they're getting cheated on. First off, when it's a situation like that and a person gets caught cheating, like, you got to believe that that person, at that point, they're outed. Like, they're capable of anything. So they're desperate. What could they do? Like, how many times have you heard of that scenario where the person who cheated flips it on the friend and then they tell their significant other that their friend is just jealous, or they straight up lie that, you know, the friend tried hitting on them, and they'll basically pin you against your friend. You know what I'm saying?
Completely agree. There's a way that you do it, right? There's a word that I've been using a lot with my friend group, tact, T-A-C-T.
Yes.
There's
Absolutely.
Tact that you must have in going about that. Excuse me. I was talking to a young lady this past week, and she was saying that a person, she was dating a guy, and this is when Facebook was like the main social media thing, and showing our age, right? And
we grown and sexy, baby.
Someone, you damn right, say it again. And someone Facebook messaged her saying, from a private account, they had no followers, none of that, and they just said, your boyfriend, whatever his name was, is cheating on you. And I thought that was very good tact to go about. And that gave her, you know, it puts a bug in her ear, and she had to go find out for herself to get proof of that, right? Because you have to get proof. I don't think you could just be willy-nilly just believing everybody, because some people just are haters on your relationship. I do agree with you, though. You can't just, Rachel, Brian's cheating on you, right? You can't just say it like that, because then Rachel has, you know, she loves you. You know, she's in love with you. That's your wife.
Like, some people are just so wrapped up in their relationship. Like, they don't think that their significant other could do anything wrong. So it's like, when somebody brings that up, it's like, okay, do you have ulterior motives? Like, why are you telling me that? So here's my thing. I would go confront the person, and I'd be like, look, either you tell him first, you come clean to my boy, or I'm going to tell him. However, this is key. This is key right here. When you see that person cheating, you need to get those receipts. So you need to bust out that cell
That's
phone.
That's true. Yes.
You need to take those pictures. True. You need to take that video. Because if they try to pull some slick shit on the back end and try to say, oh, well, you're just jealous, or you want to get with me, you tried hitting on me, don't believe him. Like, no. Mm-hmm. Here you go. Here's the evidence. I ain't trying to play my dog like that.
I completely agree with you there, 100%. I don't think I've said this to you, bro. I'm very selective of my male friends. that I hang around.
Okay.
And that's because, like, if me and you are hanging out, I'm in Miami right now. We're hanging out in Miami, going around. You show me your roots or whatever. And people don't know us from The Bachelor. They see us hanging out. They may know that you're married. I'm automatically associated to you. Your personality automatically becomes my personality, right? That's just, you know, association by numbers.
It's like your reflection of who you hang out with.
Correct. You're 100% reflection of who you hang out with. I cannot hang out with cheaters. I can't hang out with, to be honest, bums. I truly cannot, because if I'm out with this individual, then I get in a relationship. This dude over here cheating, it's not going to put confidence in my girl.
Yeah.
She's like, you going out with Brian, huh? You going to Miami, huh?
It's over. It's like, are we still in a relationship?
Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to have that. I'm like, that's that dumbass, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just had to throw that out there. I big on my homies can't cheat.
I agree, bro. I agree. I totally agree that you're a reflection of the people you hang out with in any part of life, not only when it comes to like romantic relationships, but business, right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, show me true. Who your friends are, you know, as the saying goes.
And I'll show you who you are in the next 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So nice. I agree with you. You can't be, you know, clean cut and, you know, faithful in your relationship and then just have a wild man as your boy asking you to go out in single type scenarios. You know, it's going to put your relationship in a bad place.
You know, can I? I'm the single friend of my group, right? Well, my other homie, he's single now as well. But the majority of my homies are older than me. They're all older than me, actually. And they're booed up. So I feel kind of awkward at times saying, hey, bro, you want to hit the town? You want to go to dinner? Like,
Yeah.
Like, I went out with you when I was in L.A., you know, Rachel was cool or whatever, but like it makes me feel awkward. What does the single guy do in that situation when all of his homies are like married and or, you know, in long relationships?
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I think like, look at what we did. I mean, we were puppy dogs. We were harmless. We just went to dinner, chopped it up. You know what I'm saying? Like we weren't about, you know, you weren't about going out and trying to meet single women out there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you didn't put me in a bad spot or anything like that. I mean, I think that's what usually has to happen. It has to be, hey, let's get together to watch a sporting event or, you know, something chill, like, as opposed to, okay, let's go out to the club, you know, and stay out till 7 a.m. It's like, maybe I'll pass on that one. You know what I mean? As a married man.
All right. What's your hot take of the day, homie?
All right, man. So the headline is Dr. Dre ordered to pay nearly $300,000 in monthly spousal support to ex-wife Nicole Young. So in total, just to give you a quick little rundown of this, it's roughly $3.5 million for the year. She originally asked the judge for $2 million a month. $2 million a month. Hold on. The judge said that he would need to pay those $300,000 a month until the party receiving support remarries or enters into a new domestic partnership, death of either party. So those are like the stipulations, right? She also gets her health insurance paid by Dr. Dre, and he will also continue paying the expenses for the Malibu and Pacific Palisade homes, which I imagine are ridiculous mansions, right? So Dre, he previously agreed to pay Nicole a one-time payment of $2 million just days after his health scare when he had the aneurysm. I don't know if you remember that, but we didn't know if he was going to make it, but he offered her $2 million just days after that. But according to the source, the spousal support agreement is temporary as they continue their overall divorce settlement. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, man? Before I get into my hot take.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this one right here. One, I think if you're worth $1 billion, $2 million ain't shit. He could have gave her more.
It's all relative, right? Like how much we're talking about.
More. Yeah, $2 million, bro, you worth a billion. Like, come on. If you're going to break her off more than that. Now, especially if it's a one-time thing. But $3.5 million a year? And I'm already an adult. I have no children that I'm taking care of. On top of that, I got to pay your health insurance.
And you're basically paying the mortgage on two mansions.
And the mortgage on two different locations. Where in the world does health insurance cost that goddamn much? Like, it doesn't. I'm sorry. Like, why does he have to pay her health insurance on top of everything else? I mean, the man did cheat, so I'm not.
Did he cheat? Okay. See, I don't like. I didn't know that specifically, but
Well, I want to throw it out there so, you know, when people clap back, I'm like, yes, he did cheat, but damn, is cheating worth $3.5 million over the next
40 years? That's going to cost you extra, bro.
Like, yeah, like $3.5 million over the next 40 years. I just think that's a bit absurd. She got a bag, and someone like me, you know, all I thought about was when I saw this was the investing that I could do with this money.
Okay. I would flip it. So check this out. Like, I feel there's going to be men and women, I think, that are going to be triggered with this discussion, but for me, I go back to context. Like, I want to know details of the situation, right? So I know this specific situation relates to a woman getting spousal support from her soon-to-be ex-husband, but let's just say if the shoe was on the other foot,
Holly Berry.
And a woman was the breadwinner, which, hey, let's face it, like, the future is woman, right?
No, the future is woman. It happened to Holly Berry recently. She came out against this.
So we're seeing more and more of this in our society. And, you know, if she had to give, you know, if the woman had to give the man support, I think it's only fair that everything remains consistent. So if they're in a Kevin Federline situation and the dude gets $300,000 a month, it is what it is. What's fair is fair, equal, right? It's all about equality. So, but my thing is like, can we find out like where that money is going? Because like, is there a way where it's like in some type of a negotiation agreement that we know how that money is being allocated? Like, is this a situation where the money is being put to good use, where the woman or the man is starting like a business, growing a brand, like eventually becoming self-dependent and having their own money? Or is this a situation where the person, man or woman, is chilling at the spa, you know what I'm saying, like living partying it up?
You know that's what she's doing.
Okay, then I don't think that's right. Like, I understand why a man or a woman, once again, would be salty. It's like, I'm basically funding your lifestyle, right? Like, I'm basically, like, I'm paying for everything, and then I'm also giving you way more money than is perceived to be needed.
She's getting an allowance, because, I mean, if he's paying for two different houses, let's just say that's $10 million a year for everything, the upkeep, the maintenance, all that, the mortgage, plus her health insurance, let's say that's another $1 million a year. Plus $3.5 million a year? I want someone to argue me on this.
No, listen.
I really do.
And think about it. Like, let's go back to what this judge said. Until the party receiving support remarries. So maybe she has a hot girl summer all day, every day, never remarries, right? And but at the same time, on the flip side, a dude could just be a fuckboy for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And let's say in a new domestic partnership.
What does that mean? That is so vague. It's incredibly ambiguous.
Like, they could be dating somebody and keep it casual in appearances, right? And then just be like, okay, we're together, but I still want to get this check. Let's not put this out in the public. And that's it. And they're getting $300,000 a month. So I just think it's very sketchy when it comes to that. And but here's the thing. I know women are going to argue, well, I raised his kids, not necessarily saying this is the exact scenario for everybody, but things that women bring up.
Correct.
I raised your kids, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. You had nothing before, you know, when we first got together, you were broke as shit. And now
why is the Drake line coming to my head?
What?
You know the Drake line, the Kobe Bryant Drake line?
Oh, the Rick Ross?
Rick Ross, yeah.
Hey, man, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
You wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
But here's the deal. Like, women could say, look, would Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, yes, would he have been the man that he was, the basketball player that he was?
He would not have been.
If it wasn't for Vanessa being in his corner every day, raising beautiful children, like taking care of the home.
He needed Vanessa.
Right? So it made him a better man. So, like, that part, I understand. So here's my, like, my final take on this. Like, at the end of the day, when there's that much money involved, like, I think I read he was like worth $820 million. It's like, I think it should be negotiated a lump sum where the person receiving the money is set for life, right? It's like, this is so much money. Like, this is generational money. Like, let's say they came to an agreement on $10 million. I mean, he offered her two. Let's say they negotiate.
Well, two was some BS. He was tripping with two.
Two, you know.
Like, he tripped like, bro, like, you pissed $2 million.
But let's say like 10 to 20, which at the end of the day isn't a huge dent in that 820, right?
Correct.
So it's like, okay, miss, or man, you know, whoever gets the money, you have enough money to spend wisely. Like, if you go ahead and blow all that money and then expect me to continue funding your life like 10 years from now, like, that ain't happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not the way it should go. Like, you could do so much with that. I mean, bro, you live in Texas. I mean, I hear people in Houston are getting like mansions in Houston for dirt cheap.
So I was just doing some math right quick because I wanted to know what it is, right? They're in their 50s. If she lives another 30 years, you know, God willing, that's roughly $105 million over 30 years.
See, that's
unnecessary.
It's unnecessary, yes. Again, like on both ends, right? If the guy was getting $105 million, I'd say, bro, you don't need $105 million.
Oh, like, no, correct. I'm taking gender out of the equation.
Yeah, yeah. Regardless, yeah. Exactly.
Like $105 million over 30 years, bro, that's... No, I need your ass to work and go hustle. Correct. and go sell some Beats by Dre.
Correct. So it's like I would either give them a lump sum that is agreed upon where it's like, listen, you have enough to start a whole new life and live lavishly if you want, or I'll give you the $300K a month, but how about we do it like on a sliding scale where it's like every so often you start getting less and less until it completely runs out.
Now, I think that's how it should be. Yeah. I think that, because like, obviously, if I've been married to you for over 20, let's say they've been married 25 years or whatever, I do have some love for you. And if I'm worth 820 and you're, you know, you haven't worked in like 30 years, I do feel, even if we got a prenup, I do feel that since you haven't worked in that 20 years, you're not going to get a job now. This is your lifestyle. I should aid in that department, but also it should, like you just said, wane off.
Yeah.
Like if I'm giving you 300 a month, in 10 years, that 300 might be 30 a month now. I don't know.
Exactly. Like, think about it. I mean, think about how much, like, what are you doing in those 10 years? That's why I asked, can we know where the money is being allocated? Like,
but see, when you say that, though, you're almost being controlling.
Listen, I don't think I would nitpick, like, okay, like, you need to spend me a spreadsheet on, like, everything you're saying. Well, but it's like,
when you get divorced, people sometimes be on that BS.
You're right.
But, you know, people, when it comes to love and when it comes to money, people can get ugly.
I wouldn't be as much of a stickler like the way you're describing it. But at the same time, it's like, I want to see you doing something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm providing you an amazing opportunity to you start a new life. And,
it is an amazing opportunity.
Yes. Get a new business, you know, get some real estate. Like, make that money work for you. You know what I'm saying?
That's the funny thing, bro. If she were to, because, you know, I come from the financial advisory thinking, right? If she makes $3.5 million a year, she invests $2 million a year, she's not going to need his money.
That's it. She won't even need it. That's like, it. Literally. But if, like, I'm simply, you know, funding, you know, brunches and for you to get with other dudes or vice versa.
$100 salads.
Her funding you to get with, you know, be without with a thousand women, you know, in 1 year, then that ain't right.
Brian, this is such a good topic because, I mean, it's genderless, right? For one.
Right.
We both know women is the future. Women is here and is going to be here to stay. And so Brennan just came off of a wonderful season with Katie as a bachelorette. She's a strong, independent woman. I want Brennan's take on this. Brennan, let's bring him in.
Number one, I just want to say thank you for having me on. And you know, it's a pleasure. It's an honor, and it's great to meet you guys. So
absolutely,
it's great to meet you as well, man. You went very far on the show, but we didn't get much time with you. You didn't get a lot of airtime on that. How did your three relationships end, and what did you learn from that? And what did you learn while being with Katie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I dive in deep with my past relationships, I've been through three of them. My first one was about 4.5 years, and then my last two were both 2 years. I've been single for about 2 years now, and I have nothing but respect for the women I was with. Nothing's ever really ended toxic. Nothing's ever ended bad. If I saw my ex in public, we'd be the first ones to say hello to each other. So nothing but respect. And you have to go through breakups to really grow as a person and to find that person for you eventually. You become a better person after each heartbreak. I know what that is. I know what heartbreak is. You do. It's a journey within yourself when you go through those tough moments in life. But you know, it's in relationships you lose a best friend, and I think that's the toughest thing. You lose a family as well. You grow to love their parents. And I think that's the biggest thing with heartbreak. It's not just a person, right? It's someone you love, but it's a best friend and a second family to you. So nothing but love for the people I've dated in the past. I grew as a person, and I definitely helped them out in many ways too. I was there for them in through the darkest times, and they were there for me through very tough times in my life. You know, transitioning into the bachelorette, and you know, Katie being a very strong, independent woman, you know, I felt like we both had very similar personalities. Like you said, not too much was shown with our time.
Why do you feel that?
But I you know what? It's weird because I was very bold. You know, every time I handed her a drink, and then, you know, that's the funny thing around social media. It's like, you know, Brennan's Katie's personal bartender. And that's one thing. You go to a bar, I mean, a woman wants to get a drink first. So it's like, you know, have her drink ready. She likes her whiskey. And I pulled her first a lot. I really did. And that's one thing people thought I sat back and kicked it with the guys. I love the guys so much, but when it came down to cocktail parties, group dates, I took them very seriously, and I was all in with Katie. So we had some great conversations. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that wasn't aired, but I did like little cute little dates for her. You know, I did this little Canadian gift basket. You know, we got to a point where we're talking about, you know, kind of getting to know, you know, her home in Seattle and if she's comfortable there, or could she see herself being in Canada, and kind of vice versa. And I brought a Canadian gift basket with maple cookies, maple syrup, and some Canadian beers. And we just kicked it on the couch. Nice. And I said, you know what, like relationships aren't just about, obviously it's about connection, but just talking about feelings all the time, it does get emotionally draining through that whole experience. And I just said, you know what, this is what real life would be like, us on the couch kicking it, having some beers and having some snacks, and just kind of giving her a glimpse of what just normal life would be with me. But I'm not too sure about, you know, with the airtime and everything, but for myself as an individual, you know, I don't need the TV show to define who I am. I don't need to show the world what Katie and I have. Like, I'm very content with, I know what we share, like deep down, like, and then Katie knows, like, we had some good moments. I made her feel very special and vice versa. And we had some great life talks together, and I listened to her life story. She listened to mine. And,
were you falling in love with Katie?
No, I definitely wasn't falling in love. It got to that point where, you know, I didn't have that time, and leading up to, you know, my departure, even the week before that, like I was so hungry for a one-on-one date, and I didn't want to have the what ifs. That was my biggest worry. That was my biggest fear, is the what ifs. Like, you know, I know for a fact, I'm a fun guy. I know if we go on that one-on-one date, like, I'm going to kill it. We're going to have the best time together. We're going to laugh, you know, share intimate moments. I was very confident with that, but I wasn't falling in love, but I know deep down, you know, we shared some good memories together, and you know, we did have a really good connection.
Yeah, I love that you say that, because I remember on my season, there was a gentleman, one of my dear friends, Matt Munson. I mean, nobody got to know him as much, but for whatever reason, you saw like Rachel bawling, you know, when he left. And it was a situation where, like, you don't get to see those behind the scene moments where you guys are connecting. So I totally trust you when you say that you guys had, you know, some deep moments that brought you together. And there was a reason why you were on there so long. And I love how bold you were at the end, right? You didn't get that one-on-one date. You got on another group date, and going into hometowns, you're like, it basically came to a head. You're like, listen, I can't go into hometowns coming off a group date. You needed that one-on-one time, and you approached her with that. And I think that was the best thing you could have done. You know what I mean? Like, let's nip it in the bud right now. Unfortunately, she did send you home right there, but you knew, rather than investing more feelings, going on another group date and, you know, shelling out your feelings even more, and just like basically waiting on the inevitable to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that was my biggest thing, is that, you know, I have nothing but respect for Katie. I have nothing but respect for the guys that were there, the six other guys. And I'm like, I told the guys straight up, I said, boys, listen, like, I respect you guys so much. You know, why am I still here? Like, especially getting the last rose. At the last rose ceremony, you know, some great guys went home, you know, Aaron, James, Hunter, and Trey, like guys that had more time. And that, you know, that week, the group day cocktail party got cut short because Katie was feeling sick. She cut the rose ceremony cocktail party. She, you know, we didn't do that. And I was prepared to go home. Like, I wrote notes that night to a couple guys saying, like, thank you for everything. I wrote a note to the guys just to let them know, you know, I love you guys and thank you for this amazing experience. I was prepared to go home. I was trying to get in that mindset, because I knew, you know, and my name gets called, and it was a roller coaster full of emotions. You know, I was super shocked, you know, super excited that I'm still there. So when I got that last rose under those circumstances, I knew I was a shoo-in for a one-on-one. I said, there's no doubt. And when Katie gave me that rose, I whispered to her, I said, we'll make up for lost time. And, you know, I'm like, if I'm still here after losing time this week, there must be a reason. And that's why I was so confident and also nervous for that group day card. I was very nervous for it, but I think that's the biggest thing. Katie's looking for a fiance. She's looking for a husband. If I can remove myself from that scenario, that's, and cause it's not fair for me to be there, but it's also not fair for Katie just to kind of have me around as well. I want her to find her person and invest more time with those guys. And being on that group date, fun group date, funny laughter, I would have probably brought some bad energy there, and I didn't want to do that as well. So I decided to just get up and like you said, nip it in the bud and move forward, you know? So
that's respectful. I like that. Absolutely. You are, you know, you want the best for her because she is the bachelorette, and that's, you know, she's here to find love. And albeit you guys are as well.
When you do have time with Katie and you hang out with her at cocktail parties and you have your time with her, you walk out, you know, you share a beautiful intimate moment, you kiss and you talk about, you know, you know, each week you get deeper and deeper and deeper and you peel back those layers. So whenever, every time I walked out and the guys would be like, oh, like, how was it? I'm like, man, I'm on top of the world. It was incredible. Like, I feel like I have the best connection here. Yeah. So then you sit down and you're on the couch talking to the guys. And then, you know, another guy will walk out and it's like, how was he? He's like, man, it was unbelievable. So the tough thing about being on The Bachelorette is you only know your connection with Katie. You don't know any other guy's connection, but you feel like you're in the lead every single day. So it does play tricks on your mind a little bit, and it's, you got to be mentally strong. And that's why I think it's so mentally draining for anyone who goes through this whole experience.
Definitely so. Well, man, we got that from the Bachelorette. We understand that aspect, but we never got more of who you are. I know that you're a firefighter, and I know you grew up in Canada. How was life growing up for you back home?
Yeah, life was good, man. It's kind of not a love hate, but it was very untraditional, you know, kind of the family upbringing. It's sometimes I get confused talking about my own family, but you know, to really dive in, my family is fairly small. Everyone's kind of back home in Europe, but you know, I have my mom and dad who, you know, were my best friends. They immigrated to Canada, you know, when they're about 10 or 11. So shout out to my grandparents.
From where?
My mom was from Poland and my dad's from Czech Republic. And so, you know, they came to Toronto when they were young. So I grew up, born and raised in Toronto, Ontario. And, you know, we grew up in, you know, a nice family home, good neighborhood. My parents were never married. And they separated when I was about three. My dad moved out, all this stuff. I also have two siblings. And this is the part that confuses me a little bit too. And it's actually a big insecurity, and I'll explain why after. But so I have two siblings, my brother Ryan, he's 31, and my sister Nicole, who's 40, but they're both, yeah, they're my half siblings. And, but we are—
On your dad's side or your mom's side?
Same mom, different dad. But grew up in the same household. My sister, who's also mixed, she got married at 21, or maybe she was having a kid. I don't know, kid or marriage, one of those things. So she decided to move out, and she was a huge role model in my life. I mean, at that, we're 15 years apart. She was kind of like a second mom to me as well. So when she moved out, that was very hard on me, even though I was young. And then my brother decided I think when he was about 14 or 15, he's moving out to his dad's outside the city of Toronto. So I was kind of stuck with kind of no more siblings and going home to home. So, but my parents, you know, my parents get along very well. We, you know, there was a lot of ups and downs growing up too, and going home to home, that was tough.
What do you mean going home to home?
Just like my dad moved out, you know, like he's, you know, they were, my dad got his own place. And so, yeah, I was just kind of having, you know, kind of going home to home. I think one big thing, you know, not really having like a family dynamic of like eating at the dinner table, like the little things. Every year for Christmas, we would all come together and do that. But I'm not really used to the whole family dynamic. And then maybe that's why I've always leaned towards relationships and finding love, because I don't really want, you know, what I went through for my family one day. I just want it to be like a close-knit traditional family. But, you know, kind of going back with my siblings, we are so close. I never look at them. I never say they're my half siblings at all. When we go out, it's sort of, you know, people, oh, this is my brother. It's like, oh, like some people are like, oh, I've never met him before. I see him on, you know, your Instagram or whatever, but you know, like, are you, do you have the same mom, different dad? And that's something that kind of bothers me, because like we are so close, probably closer than like some actual biological siblings. One of those things too. And even going out, like with my sister, it's like, this is my brother, but my sister's mixed. She's half Jamaican, half Polish. One of the smartest women in the world. She can speak Polish. She's bilingual, French. Like it's insane. And then we have to explain ourselves again. So that's kind of like an insecurity for me. It's usually, it's like, oh, this is my brother and sister. But then people always have questions about like our family life, because it is kind of dysfunctional, but like, I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world, but we are so close. But yeah, sort of, I had a great upbringing. I played hockey. My dad's my best friend. He was at every game. My mom didn't really get into the sports side too much, but you know, out of, I think the three kids, one of us should have turned out maybe not normal a little bit, but we always make a joke. Like we all turned out, you know, really good. Everyone, my brother's successful, my sister's successful. And I feel like I have a great head on my shoulders, and we lean on each other every single day. So shout out to them. I love them so much. And yeah, so, but overall, like all in all, guys, regardless of anything, you know, nothing but like best parents in the world. You know,
yeah.
I had a roof over my head. I had food on the table, and that's really all you can ask for. So,
I love your situation there, because my dad was actually married prior to marrying my mom, and he had three kids. You know, so I do technically they're half siblings as well, but like you say, I consider them full blood. You know what I mean? Like they're my brothers and my sisters. None of this half stuff, but you know. So I totally agree with you there. But having that non-traditional family structure, like, how do you feel like that influenced you when it came to relationships with women?
Yeah, I do. And this is kind of an ongoing thing, Brian, it's a good question, but it is an ongoing thing. I continue to learn. I always want to learn each and every day about myself and why I am the way I am. You know, I went through times too, you know, kind of tough times, just kind of looking back and maybe putting blame on, you know, like, why aren't my siblings, my full siblings. And, you know, like I would ask my mom, like, well, you know, it's kind of tough because I get questions and it's hard on me. But I've always
what
looked
questions
at
do you get?
It was just, well, it's when people try to like, when they want me to explain, you know, the whole family dynamic and, you know, oh, you guys have the same mom, different dad, but like, where's his dad? And I thought it's kind of an ongoing thing. I don't know if Brian ever kind of relates to it or one of those things, right? It's kind of tough to explain until you're in that scenario. But I think with the whole relationship dynamic, I've thought about, I've always became very close with my girlfriend's families. That's something that family is very important to me. And I like being in a tight knit family as well. And whoever you date or end up marrying, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, like, yeah, your in-laws, you know, that's the motto. You're not marrying your in-laws, you're marrying her. But listen,
you marry the family too, bro. Trust me, you marry the family.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one big thing for me. But I relied sometimes too, maybe as like an escape from going home to home. It was tough because every morning I would pack a duffel bag in my toiletry bag. And this is up until like, you know, 3 years ago. Like living alone has made me, just understand, you know, a lot. So I would wake up, pack a duffel bag, go to work. I didn't know where I was going to sleep. Maybe I would go to my dad's, maybe I would go to my mom's, depending on, you know, like the scenario at home. Maybe I'd go to my brother's and stay on the couch. Like it's one of those, it was weird, right? So
yeah, Brendan, I want to unravel that. I'm confused a bit. You said you would just like live out of your duffel bag, basically. Talk to me more about that, man. Like, were you like being pulled in multiple different directions? You just kind of want that one unit, but you don't have the one unit. So I want to know more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I never had my own space. Let's put it in that perspective. I would have my clothes at my mom's, cause she was amazing at doing laundry. And typical European women, they know how to do laundry. So, she's just, you know, she's best cook, you know, knew how to do laundry. So I kept all my clothes at my mom's. Then I would go to my dad's lot because playing hockey, playing sports, I would stay at my dad's quite a bit, but I never had a schedule because my parents did get along, which I'm very fortunate for. So I never had a schedule of like where to be. So it's really what I wanted to do. So I would just pack up, you know, I'd go to work. I'd be like, hey, I'm packing a bag today, leave it in the car. And you never know where you're going to end up. It's one of those things. But that was normal for me. So when people were like, oh, like where are you living? I'm like, oh, I'm kind of, you know, between mom's, dad's, you know, I'm going to figure it out tonight. Like, I don't know where I'm going to stay, but I'm going to have a roof over my head. So people would kind of feel bad. I'm like, no, this is like completely normal. Cause I grew up going home to home, between places. So, but now looking back and actually living alone, sometimes guys, I just come here and I'm not really a big TV guy, but I put on some music, have a glass of wine, and I just sit here and I'm just like, this is so nice to come home to an actual place with
preaching my to the choir.
You need that, bro. You need that.
My place, like, cause I never had a routine either. Like I'm always go, go, go. And that's my personality. I don't like to waste time. I like waking up in the morning early and starting the day, man, like life's short. I just want to, you know, I don't want to waste time.
You're a firefighter, right?
Yeah. So fully certified. I actually, prior to the show, I was in like a very deep, interview process, with the fire department. I had to kind of turn that down, but I'm waiting in the fall now to, go through that whole interview hiring. Again, it is tough to get in, but, in the fall, I'm going to be put in a new recruit class. But I'm fully certified. Nice. I went to, they call it semi-military academy at Texas A&M. It's a massive training ground, and it is the most intense training you'll ever do. I mean, I'm surprised I survived. I had days out, I was crying. I was like,
oh wow.
I was just, yeah, like it was just, you're mentally drained, you're studying, you're doing exams on the daily, you're going into burned buildings, you're doing confined space rescue, mentally draining, right? So, but yeah, that's my passion and that's my goal. I do want to be a full-time frontline worker and be there for my community, my city, and then for the people.
Well, love respect that to you, man. I mean, that's, you know, you putting your life on the line for people on a daily basis, that's very commendable. So kudos to you. Going back to the, you know, you say you grew up in a non-traditional family structure before what it sounds like there was a lot of love, you know, in your family, but how did you look elsewhere when it came to learning about relationships and love, like in that romantic setting? Like, did you look at, you know, friends, movies, family, anything like that?
Yeah, right. That's a great question too. Cause I, you know, my sister, you know, she got married, at a young age and she has three great kids, and I don't really know where I looked at it. I just felt like, I think the most important thing in any relationship, and I kind of go back on family too. I always put two and two together, but unconditional love is like the biggest thing in life. So, you know, when, you know, I've had some arguments with my mom and dad, times where I'm like, I never want to talk to you again. You know, I'm running away from home. I'm doing all this stuff.
How much does that, your parents' dynamic, weigh on you?
Now it honestly, going through the bachelorette experience, I mean, like cause it was a journey within myself. So I started dissecting a lot of things, but, it's mostly, I just, you know, I mean, even the relationships I was in, Mike, they had like perfect traditional families, you know, like ate dinner at the tables.
So was that kind of like a replacement for you, to substitute your family for their family?
1,000%. And not just a replacement, but like it was comforting. It was nice. And like having, like, you know, I remember once in this one relationship, they're like, hey, Brendan, just set the table. And I'm like, okay, so obviously a plate and this. So like, well, napkin, like we need these napkins and like you need to set it this way. And I've never done that before.
So in your household, it's more so come home and like just chill by yourself, or like when you're at your mom's, it's just.
Yeah. Just eat. Like, hey, you want to eat on the couch tonight? You want to, you know, eat in your room, eat, you know, just lounge out, like eat on the floor. Cool. Like it was simple and it's laid back. I mean, like there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way, that's all I know. But you know, being in these relationships, I eat with my fork in my right hand and my knife in my left hand.
Yeah,
and they would say, "Oh, you're eating the goofy way." You know what I mean? They're like, "No, like you have to do it the proper way." And I said, "What do you mean? There's a proper way to do this?" So it was like the little things that I didn't really get to experience growing up, and it was comforting. Like Brian said, it was comforting. It was different, but it's like I like this. Like this is nice, and like a family at one table eating, talking about the day. I was like, this is cool. You know, so it was kind of like a replacement, and it was, it made me happy in those moments for sure.
Love is that. That something, so would you say that that's like a high priority on your list as far as what you're looking for in a woman, like somebody who does have that traditional family?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I believe everyone has a story, so I don't want them to, I don't need to be with someone who grew up in that setting, but I do want, when I have a family of my own, I do want to like sit down at the dinner table and like kick it, you know. We don't have to wear dress clothes and have all these pretty fancy napkins, but I mean, like, let's sit down, talk about the day and like have some drinks, put some music on, but like, let's all be together in one room. Like, I think it's a cool thing because it is going home to home, and there's, I don't have my siblings. I'm just going home to mom, I'm going home to dad, and there's nobody else. So it was a little bit lonely too, I would say, but I mean, I was loved. I never felt not loved. You know what I mean? But like those family dinners, I mean, I feel like they're important for an upbringing. Looking back now, I think it's a very important thing for most families and most kids.
Is there ever a time where maybe holidays or things like that, where you all come together? I mean, as rare as it might be, maybe once a year, twice a year, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Yeah. We do Thanksgiving. My brother's dad shows up. my dad was a father to my sister. So her dad wasn't in the picture. For too long. So my dad raised Nicole. And like, even when I talk to him, just like she'll say dad, and I'll say, yeah, like dad's doing this. So it's a cool thing. But yeah, no, Christmas and Thanksgiving and Christmas, it's great. Like we have my sister, we have, you know, her husband, the kids, my dad, my Ryan's dad, they all come together. They're drinking, my so, mom, okay. my grandmother. Right. So we do have that once a year. And like, we always look forward to it, man. Like it's yeah. such a cool thing. And like, absolutely. But you have to wait the whole year for it. But with COVID, it's been a tough thing, right? But like the last couple of years, like it's been a tough thing to, you know, especially when we want our grandmother there and grandfather, yeah. like, you know, it's been a tough pandemic to go through that. Cause we look forward to that every year, but we couldn't have that. So
talking about the pandemic and the things that took place in 2020, is your brother half Jamaican as well? Or
no, he's not. He's Italian and Polish.
Italian, yeah. Polish. Okay. So yeah. Brendan, what, you know, with your sister, your older sister, you know, you said you guys are the closest thing ever. How were those conversations? I'm asking because you said you had insecurities when people be asking like, well, where's her dad and things of this nature, right? Asking questions that they should just be like, yo, I get it. You know, that's your sister. That's your brother. I understand. How was it when all the things that took place in America, when it came to racial tension, with your sister and you being very Anglo-Saxon looking and your sister being of mixed race.
Right.
How are those conversations for you? Because I feel like you have a unique perspective.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's tough because like, I don't look at my, it's weird because I don't look at my sister being mixed at all. It's a weird thing until really someone brings it up or when I have to have that conversation with people. But, you know, and I think one big thing, the majority of the conversation is actually for her kids because they're in high school and they are very like they're very light skinned, but like they have Jamaican features. And that's something where a lot of kids that they deal with, they don't actually sometimes know that they're mixed and they have to have conversations with other kids. So I think mostly with her children, those topics are more important with my sister. She's very educated. She has an incredible job. She worked for the city of Toronto. And she, for her, she, we kind of just never really talked about it, to be honest, because it was something that, I know what she thinks deep down. And with me, we never really talk politics, you know what I mean? And I think being Canadian as well, we do stay away from politics a lot. It is a whole different world here when it comes to politics in America. So, but she, you know, she's aware of everything and we've, you know, we're aware of everything too, but that's something where, you know, when I walk around, like I go to the mall with my sister or hang out with her on her front porch or just hang out with her. It's, like, that's my sister and my second mom as well. Like she was a second mom to me and she still is.
Yeah.
And then that'll never change. So, I mean, you know, with my siblings, it's, I've leaned on them a lot, you know, with any problems I've had with going home to home, between, you know, going to my mom or dad's or just having a tough time. My sister was like, you know, cause I was like her first, I was like her first baby in a sense, you know. I was like, I'm the youngest, and she, like, she calls me baby boy, right? She's like, you're my first baby, and that's never going to change, right? So it's such a cool bond we have. But I wish you guys could meet her, because, like, she's the coolest girl.
So ever, she's so. Basically like your go-to whenever you have, you know, you need to vent about anything in particular, maybe some love advice. I mean, is she the one you go to?
Yeah, she's the only one married in my family, you know, because our family's small. It's mom, dad, and my two siblings, and I have my cousins and uncle, but are my immediate family. Everyone's back home in Europe, and that's a cool thing that, you know, our family history and tradition. But my sister and my brother are amazing to go to. My sister knows it from, you know, her being 40. She has this crazy different type of old school knowledge that sometimes – I know my brother gives me great advice, but my sister just has, sometimes it's like a bit more that I need from her.
And then you had mentioned you went through a deep interview process to be a fighter, and then you had to turn that down. Was that because you had one on the show, or?
Yeah. There was, you know, I look at it, I'm 26, and, you know, I'm a risk taker. I wouldn't say I'm a free spirit, but I am so adventurous. I love traveling the world. I love learning about new people. I'm a people's person. And, you know, I was raised to, you know, I'll get into that story after, with my dad's friend group. It's funny, but, I'm just very adventurous, and I'm like, I can take risks now being 26 years old. I can't do this when I'm fully locked into my ultimate goal and passion, or being locked down in a career. And, so when the show came up, I was in the psychological assessment, which is just before the final interview phase. And I knew I'd pass that because I did the written. I did a little pre-interview, and then I was getting to the psychological assessment to make sure I'm capable to handle everything. And then there would be one last step. And I reached out to them, and I told them about this, you know, specific opportunity. And they said, well, luckily for you, we have another recruit class in the fall. So
you'll be,
I took a deep breath. Yeah, I took a deep breath, and I said, let's go for it. Let's go travel the States. And I was itching to travel too during the pandemic. I was itching to travel. So you got to take risks, I think. And, you know, life's short, and I never want to look back and say, what if.
We got Mantel All coming out.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. What was that drama like in the house, man? You know,
our spill friend, the Carl, tea, bro. You got to spill the tea now.
How talk about that. I want to know about that.
I mean, first and foremost, I know when those guys have a chance to speak out on their actions, they're gonna do so. But
it's,
yeah,
it's just us talking, just the fellas.
Yeah. I know, Mike. I see you. But I'm the type of guy. I didn't get involved in drama, right? I really didn't, because I've learned through that how to listen really well. You have to learn how to be a good listener when you're in the house. You also have to think before you speak. Most guys don't, and they get caught up in there, and maybe they get that more screen time and whatnot. But I went into the house really just being myself. I didn't want to change who I was. I would sit there during arguments and really listen and really process everything. And then I would give my opinion. I would never want to cut someone off. I think everyone has their own opinion and everyone deserves to speak, but it's a very simple thing. That's just how I was raised. It's like, let someone talk, listen, process it, and then give them the feedback as well. But
what was some of the feedback you gave a few of the guys?
Well, I mean, if you want to start with Thomas, I know he'll speak out when he needs to, and he'll address all, you know, all the stigma around him. But I don't think anyone's a bad person in the house at all. I think everyone has everyone's a human being. Everyone has a story. That's what I've learned. Everybody has a story, and amazing stories. No one grew up with like a perfect white picket fence. And it's crazy to think, you know, we walk past so many people a day in our everyday lives, hundreds, maybe thousands, and we don't even ask someone how their day is going. It's crazy.
Correct.
And
so a feedback
you join, you know, so with Thomas, he was getting more attacked in the house, you know, but I had many conversations with him about his behavior and how to actually change that. Instead of me attacking him, I talked to him as a man and just said, hey man, by the way, you're not a bad dude, but you know, there's a lot of people that are sacrificing a lot to be here. There's people possibly losing jobs. There's possibly people not working because of the pandemic. We're all going through something tough. We're leaving a lot of families at home. We're leaving pets at home. We have bills to pay when we get home. I was like, dude, just treat people good. Like, we're all going through something here. We're all stressed out. So I had more conversations with him, like deep down of like, man, your behavior, you can't talk down to others maybe a little bit like this. Why don't you instead just really do this in this format? So I tried to kind of not coach, I don't want to put it in that context, but really just having a conversation about behavior, instead of full on attacking him, and because you're not going to get anything out of that. Right. So yeah. I don't know. I think that's just how I was raised, and me going in there, I didn't want to change who I was. I just stayed true to myself. So
what should we expect from the Mantello? What are we getting from you? Are we going to get screen time from you? What are you talking about? What are you saying?
I mean, I hope I'm going to get some screen time there, but let's just say I spoke my mind. I spoke up. You guys will see a different Brendan for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I spoke up to Carl. You know, I had my opinions on Thomas and, you know, Hunter and Cody. Cody, I started off, you know, telling Cody how I felt about him and, you know, what we've learned about him when he had that beef with Aaron, you know, night one. And then when Katie sent Cody home, just learning about people, right? Because anyone could really just put on a suit, get a nice haircut, and you can become this sharp dressed guy and put on a smile and everyone's a good looking guy there. So you don't like, it's like putting on a mask a little bit, right? Like when we put those suits on, like we're feeling good and everyone just seems like an awesome guy. But then when you actually get to know people and know the context behind beef, that's why I never really wanted to ever jump to conclusion with anything in the house, with drama, with anything, because that's not who I am as a person. So when I finally, gotcha. When I could finally process everything and understand, but why, you know, why? I ask my questions to guys. Well, if he's this, like, if you don't like him, but you know, why this? I just always had, I needed answers before I can put a judgment on someone. Cause I can't judge a book by its cover, but I also don't want to judge someone off someone just getting irked from them, you know, and that's not fair to anyone.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing your interaction with Carl. I mean, from the way you make it sound, I mean, I think there's some of those guys on every season, right? Where it's like, I think they know it in their head that they have no shot. So it's like they got to create some type of drama to get more screen time to stay an extra week or two. It is terrible, but that's trust me, some guys bad. Do it. Some guys do bad. It. You know what I mean? Well, like you said, they drop a bomb and they just like they mess up the entire energy of the whole show, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and that's one thing too. When we finally did get, you know, the kind of the bad energy out of the house, like we could start to breathe again. But then there'll become another bomb dropped on you. Because I always say, when things are going too smoothly and we're all happy in the house, things seem perfect. I was like, something's going to happen. It can't be this way. Our backs are like, we always have to be on our toes there. And that's part of the experience. But also, you know, it keeps us dialed in on Katie and it keeps us wanting more and more and more. Right. But, you know, kind of just going back with the mental, you guys are going to, it's going to be incredible. I mean, the audience was amazing. Tayshia and Caitlin killed it and Katie looked incredible, and there is a lot of drama and there's going to be things get heated up. Things do get heated up, guys. So great. I'm excited
to see it.
To it. But Brendan, there was also a bromance.
Yes.
That Vassar Nation needs to know about.
Please.
Apparently you knew Blake from before the show. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Please break down that friendship. Break that down.
We need to tell us how it happened.
You want to hear it? You want to hear it? I'll dive in, boys. I'll dive in. So Blake grew up with my brother playing minor hockey.
Nice.
And then they went to the same high school together. At that age, you know, having like the 4-year age gap, I was kind of like the little kid running around. And they were playing hockey and I was the little brother going to hockey games and watching them play. As you know, we started getting older, when you can have a couple drinks at the bar, you know, we all became super close. So my brother Ryan's best friends with Blake, our whole friend group is like very tight knit community. So Blake and I play on the same, you know, hockey team on Thursday nights, in the Toronto area. It's just the closest guys from growing up that are together on this hockey team. But, you know, I've been to Blake's cottage fishing with him and his brother, Cody. You know, I know Emily really well.
That's awesome.
And I was genuinely, I was shocked when he showed up, because in our friend group, him and I are the only single ones left. And it's kind of hard now because everyone's getting engaged and everyone is coupled up. So when we wanted to do something with our friends, are like, oh, well, like we're doing this with this couple. So Blake and I would just be, it's just us, man. Like we're the only guys here without someone. So
would you guys go out like to bars, you know, yeah, to go meet women?
As boys.
Okay. So this
time. Yeah, we just, you know, little friend group action, just go get some drinks, go fishing at his cottage, hang out, barbecue together, just him and I, just, you know, just kicking it. So,
how much did Blake know about you going on the show?
Oh, he knew. I mean, I was with Blake 2 weeks before I flew out to New Mexico. And the reason why that, you know, it's weird just that we're on back-to-back seasons, but our whole friend group said, if there's anyone that could like find love on a reality show and actually do this experience, it's like literally Brendan and Blake. Right. So Blake went through his season. That's the only season I ever watched, just to support him, obviously. So yeah, I was with Blake 2 weeks before I flew out. I remember FaceTiming him at the airport and I'm like, hey man, he's like, all right, buddy, well, you're in it now. Good luck. Good luck. And I'm like, all right, buddy, like I'll see you when I'm home.
Talk to me about that dynamic. Like, so wait, you guys are literally competing for the same woman. Like, I don't know if that ever happened off the show, but you know, usually two boys like, all right, you know, you connect more with her, I connect more with her, and you guys go your separate ways. But now you're competing against the same woman. Like, did that affect your friendship in any way?
No. Well, when Tayshia walked in, she said, you know, journeys are going to change. And I literally started trying to connect dots. And I'm like, I look over to James on the couch. I'm like, dude, it's Blake. Like, it's, I'm 99.9% sure it's Blake.
So talk about that. You were 99.9% sure it was Blake. You guys are great friends. You guys are homies. You FaceTime while you were like about to hit up New Mexico.
Yeah.
Did you know Katie was going to be the bachelorette?
So our sources, I mean, nothing was confirmed by ABC, with all this stuff going on in the news, like I had a very, I was, we were 97% sure. Like we knew she was going to be the bachelorette until it got confirmed. And obviously when it was, and we watched after the final rose, that's when, you know, we kind of took a deep breath. You know what I mean? So.
Okay. So you guys knew that for the most part, like a good chance that Katie was going to bachelorette. Did Blake, what was his thoughts then? Like, he was like, yo, that's my wifey right there. What was that?
Yeah. So when Blake was addressing the guys, you know, I was very vocal because I felt like I had to protect Blake coming in.
No, I'm talking about when it was just you two back home in Canada.
Oh, back home in Canada. Before I was even in the final casting stage, like Blake spoke very highly of Katie. He was very interested. He really liked her. I mean, there was all those memes going around on Instagram about Blake and Katie being perfect for each other. And Blake's like, yeah, man, like I really like this girl. I want to meet her. So he was trying to help you get on the show. But it's funny. Well, he wasn't helping me to get on, but he was just giving me advice to be like, listen, just like be yourself and don't really change yourself. Be who you are. You know, you're a well-loved guy from the house. I know, you know, no one's going to hate you. And, he's like, you're a good dude, man. He's like, everything's gonna be fine. So he's kind of just, it's nerve wracking leading up to leaving, you know, flying out, you have a 2 week notice. Right. So, but Blake spoke very highly of Katie. And, before I even kind of knew I was going to get into the final, get that final phone call to be on The Bachelorette.
Was there ever any tension? Like, did it get to a point where it's like I said, you both like the same woman? Like, did you guys maybe not see eye to eye, or was it all kumbaya from the moment he got there?
As soon as he got there, like I was telling you guys, I felt like I had to protect him, but protect the house as well. And because the guys were pissed, you know, they were just like, oh, here we go, another curveball. And Blake, you know, basically said, you know, this is weird because I know Brendan. And I just told the guys, I said, guys, as hard as this is to say and for you guys to hear, you know, before I even got on the show, Blake, all he did was talk about Katie and his interest in her. And he is here for the right reasons. And he is genuine. And it's tough for a guy coming in that late. But we just handled it as men. We knew nothing was going to come in between our friendship. Because for myself, all he wants for me is to find someone and fall in love and you know, have a partner. And if Katie wasn't going to choose me, I would want Blake to be happy. And if he ever got a chance with Katie you know, to fall in love, like I would be happy for him. Like I'd be a terrible friend if I didn't want him to be happy, you know? So, my biggest fear though was, cause I addressed it to Katie about like, hey, there's an elephant in the room. Like, let's talk about this because you just went on a one-on-one with my good buddy. Mm. And we kind of laughed about it and whatnot. But my biggest fear, guys, to be totally honest, was, I know, I think Katie's such an incredible woman and I think very highly of her. And I knew she wouldn't want drama. Like, she doesn't like drama in the house. Right. And she doesn't want bullshit. So she says it how it is. And I was worried that if she knew potentially this would come in between our friendship, I was worried that I would get sent home. Blake would get sent home, or both of us like, see you later. I don't want to come in between this friendship.
If it came down to that, would you bow out?
You know what? Like that's a tough question. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've known Blake for a while and I have nothing but respect for him. And I'm sure if we had to have that conversation, we'd probably come up to a conclusion. But one big thing in the normal world, guys, and I told Wells this as well. I said, in a normal world, this would never happen. But in this world, it's normal. It really is. Yeah, and yeah. No. You know, it was weird though, for sure. Like I was shocked. You guys probably saw my face. I looked at him. I'm like, you know, I kind of gave him that
tell
look.
Me this?
Yeah. I was just like, it was cause part of me wanted to just jump up and hug him. But then part of me was like, whoa, whoa, wait, like I need a second to process this. You know what I mean? But all in all, we just handle it like men. And I wanted Blake to just find happiness as well. And if he had that opportunity and in the end, it's Katie's journey, right? If Katie's looking for a husband, and I told her this too, when we sat down, I said, it's weird. I'll be honest. It is a little weird seeing Blake here, but this is your journey. And if you need to explore this connection, like you're finding a husband, like this is something huge. This is important. It's not, you're not playing games here. So whether if my brother came or Blake, you know, Blake's there, it's like, if you need to explore this for a potential opportunity to get engaged at the end of it, so be it. Like that's like you need that, and so you have to put Katie first in every scenario, and that's what I did.
You like them together?
I feel like they both have good energy, and but you know what, she has connections with you know, a lot of the other guys too. Yeah, you know, it's very strong connections. It's tough because every conversation, it seemed, you know, I always ask the guys, I'm like, is it just me that, you know, I felt like I was in like front running spot at one point. I felt so good about our chat and, you know, sharing a kiss with her. And then it's like, is it just me? Is she just so awesome and easy to talk to? And she makes everything so easy, or like, do I really have this connection? You know,
I think that's a attribute of a great lead, right? Where they could pretty much make everybody feel comfortable and make it seem like their time together was, you know, makes them feel like you did, like you're on cloud nine, leaving the interaction. You think you're in, you know, you're in a good position to win her heart. And right. I think that's a tribute to Katie and her being a great bachelorette.
Hey, well, we love to hear you were incredibly honest and open and sharing with us. So from both of us, we love talking it out with you here today. Thank you. And you're welcome back anytime, man.
Appreciate you,
Brad. Thank you, guys. Thanks for your time. I love you guys. And I'm sure I'll see you soon and we'll keep in touch.
For sure.
Definitely so. Can't wait, buddy. For me and tell all. Have a great one.
Yeah. Take care.
See you guys. Take care. Take care, guys.
Brian, I think we got some good information right there.
I mean, I think we got some piping hot tea.
We got some tea. I love Brendan was open. We had to like, you know.
I loved how you pushed him, bro. I felt
I
like.
I had to push him. I was so confused.
Did that tequila get to you a little bit? You were like. No. Brendan
is a very good politician. So I was like, no, I gotta cut to the cheese.
You need to sift through all the.
Yeah, I had to get right to it.
He's giving me.
Because, I mean, like, I was unsure of the type of upbringing that he had, you know.
Yeah.
I genuinely care and I want to know. And so,
yeah.
I was unsure. I'm like, you got two parents, you got, you know, siblings, like, you got a pretty good situation.
Yeah, it seemed
know?
Like so there was a lot of love, right? But yeah, then he like, talked
he,
about.
Yeah, he said, you know, he has love, but then, I was very.
Going from house to house and.
Correct. I was confused. Yeah. He's talking about, you know, he's, you know, running away from home. I'm like, let's unravel that. It was, it wasn't me trying to push him. It was me trying to understand him.
Yeah, let's go a little bit deeper. I get you.
Yeah, but he is a politician, so therefore, I felt that it was necessary to do so.
And I mean, I love
when you asked him about being the bachelor. He was like, he was political about that response as well. I'm like, bro, do you want to be the bachelor or not? Is it like, you know, something that you could do? So that's all.
And I'm actually really looking forward to, you know, watching this man tell all him get into it with Carl.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Absolutely, man. But
I love what he said about Carl. I mean, he was honest. And I love how he, Brendan was speaking about Thomas. He wasn't disrespectful. Brendan is not disrespectful whatsoever. He's just being honest.
He like approached him as a man, right?
Correct. Exactly.
And he told him about himself.
That's why you gotta love Brendan.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, to all of our listeners, we absolutely love you guys. Thank you once again for tuning into today's episode.
Now, I love every single one of y'all. I don't know if y'all saw it, but we hit over 5K on IG. We're at like 5,200. So keep following.
Yes.
Keep talking to us. Keep showing love, because we're going to keep showing love back. And you know, we always love to hear those opinions. So make sure that you let us know how you feel about everything. And don't forget to like, comment, follow, message us on social at Talking It Out BN. That's Talking Out B as in Bachelor in His Nation on IG, Facebook, and Twitter. And as always, don't forget to hit that subscribe on our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or baby, wherever you listen to right now. And as always, don't DM me no more until you hit that subscribe. Love y'all.